Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, what an awesome way to start, and almost every morning like this is one in which I wish you could just, wouldn't it be awesome to start every day like that? Just come in here and somebody would be singing and you just have to sit there and read the words and meet the Lord, and that would be so cool.
Amen.
You know, we're just grateful, like, you know, the same. I think we could extend the exact same thing to you from up here. Thank you for being so welcoming. Thank you for accepting us and bringing us in and allowing us to just be up here. It's humbling. I know what it's like for you to work so hard in such a strategic, difficult, challenging area, and then to allow someone to come up and speak to you. Thank you for having open hearts and allowing God to speak, and we're just grateful for that. So thank you for that opportunity. Today we're going to, I forgot my clicker. I'm so sorry, I forgot it up there. Oh, Jason will get it. Today we're going to talk about grace, and what a cool topic. One, that's our last name, and it shouldn't have been. I'll just tell you, it really should not have been our last name. The reason is because my dad was, he was basically a street kid. He was adopted. We came from a very poor area in Colorado, and now he never knew. He knew he was adopted, and he never knew, who his father was. But he was, raised as his last name was Grace, and then he went away to the Navy and to the military, and when he went, they had to get his birth certificate. For the first time, he saw on there that somebody named Smith was not his father. And at that time, he was very kind of angry that he'd been not told any of this information, and so he eventually found out that that there was a man named Smith who was his father. And when I was in college, I got a phone call from my dad, and he said, "Hey, Chris, you want to meet your grandpa?" And I go, "My grandpa, I already know him pretty well." And he goes, "No, my dad." And I go, "What do you mean your dad?" He goes, "I found him. He was in Kentucky. I've been searching for him for over 20 years. I did it on my own. I found him, and he's in Kentucky, and he's up here. You want to go out? We're going to go to dinner in Denver if you want to join me." And my first thought was, he owes me like 20 Christmas presents and birthday presents, man. Where's this man been? It was awesome. It was restorative, but I'm really glad I'm not a Smith. I don't know if anybody's a Smith out there.
Sorry.
I'm glad I'm a Grace, man. I'm just going to be honest with you. It's an amazing name. I wish y'all could be Grace. You all are Grace. It's amazing. For by grace you have been saved. I think, by the way, this word is so cool. Before I get into it in grace, I just have to tell you one quick story. I don't even know how this ties in, but when our kids were little, I'd come home from work and we'd be messing around and I'd take them on the bed. You know, when they're like two or three, you can easily handle them, you know. You're like, "Get up there." And they'd jump on the bed and I'd knock them over and I'd grab the pillow. And the whole time I would say, "I'm going to whoop you good." And so I'd get there, "I'm going to whoop you." And I'd hit the pillow and they'd fall down and they'd laugh and we'd roll. And I'd say, "I'm going to whoop you again, blah, blah, blah." Well, it got to be a game all the time of me whooping them. And so family would come over. I remember my dad and others would come over one time, and they're sitting there eating, and the kids would walk up to me, "Daddy, Daddy, can you whoop us now?" And I'd say, "Boy, did you get your room clean to pick up?" "No, I'll go do it now. Then will you whoop me after that?" And I'll say, "Yeah, I'll probably whoop you after that. Did you get your bath time in?" And she'd pick, "Yeah, got it in." I said, "Okay, well, after you get on that, and you're very quiet, I'm going to come whoop you." And my dad looked at me like, "What the heck are you doing?"
Nate, I don't think he said heck, though.
No, he didn't. He was not a believer, man. His language was all over the place. But friends would come over, and I knew it would happen. I just, you're sitting there at dinner. "Daddy, Daddy, would you whoop us now?" "Son, I'll whoop you in just a little bit. I promise you." They're like, "Promise, Daddy?" I said, "Yeah. You get in there, be quiet, and I promise I'll whoop you." "Thank you, Daddy. Thank you." And people look at me like, "What kind of man are you? You have control over your children." I said, "Yes. Just call me up. I'll whoop you." That's what my dad, I remember him just going, "Man, that's amazing." Grace. This is why the last name is so cool. In the Old Testament, you know what it means? It's the word hen. Heni. You will find it in various places. But here's where you're going to find this amazing word. You know what it means? It means favor in the eyes of the Lord. He looks upon you as beloved and beautiful. And he says, you are favored. But the most amazing word is in Greek. And that word is charis. Charis. And it's the word that's translated as what? A gift. All right? So now I go back to my name, Charis. And I think, Charis. That's awesome. Charis Grace. Grace, grace, grace upon grace. And I grew up with absolutely zero knowledge of what that word meant. Nothing. This word, charis in the New Testament, you're going to find it everywhere, man. If there's a true false, does the word grace ever show up in the New Testament? The answer is, oh, yeah, it is the New Testament. In fact, it's probably the one word that this researcher, when he was studying all these different cool things about humans, he said if there's any one word he would take, it's the word gift. He would take it with him to heaven. Okay, Lisa, as we talk about these words, some of the things come up. But I think one of the best is this idea, first of all, that in relationships, the way it's used, it's the gift of acceptance. Think about that for just a minute. When I accept somebody, it means that I'm extending them grace. It's the gift of acceptance in a relationship. We've been around a lot of firefighters. Well, not a lot, but enough. Well, however many are in here right now? No, not really. We've been around a lot of firefighters, and we have never felt such acceptance. The gift from you guys of acceptance. Because I'm going to tell you, there are some firefighters, just like there are some cops, like my dad, who did not accept influence from anybody outside their tribe. And they would say to you, yeah, but you're not a firefighter. And so if I get up here talking to you, some of you would say, like my dad would have in the cop area, and you'd say, whatever, man, whoever, I don't care who you are. I don't care that you're a doctor. I don't care that you do X, Y, and Z. You're not part of us. So I'm not going to listen to you. That's how it felt like. Do you agree some firefighters are like that? Yeah, they are, man, but none of them up here. I'm telling you, we feel acceptance from you. And you're offering me, and you're offering my wife, you're offering us grace. It's a free gift. You don't have to do that. But y'all do. In your actions, in your hearts, in the way you reach out and talk to us. That's called acceptance, and that's called the gift of acceptance. And that's what we do in relationships. I don't deserve it. I'm not part of your tribe. But you extend grace. And that was a hard lesson for me growing up as a cop kid, and all we hung around with were cops and all the cruddy things they saw. This is amazing. At least I think this is probably our favorite passage related to this.
I do. You talk about grace being the gift of acceptance. Let's read this verse from Romans. Therefore, accept one another just as Christ also accepted us. This is amazing in terms of relationship, because what it's saying is that we can only accept each other based on the fact that Christ has also accepted us. In other words, that grace that he extends to us, the friendship that God extends to us that we talked about that very first night, that's the very basis, and it's the very source of our ability to extend that to one another. Isn't that beautiful? Let's go to the next one. And when we think about it in terms of relationships, grace and that gift of acceptance, we see it. We see it expressed in gratitude when we share and express and extend our gratitude, recognizing that in each other. Things that we express that we're appreciative, we admire something, and we value something about the other person. So it's expressed in gratitude. Grace, as acceptance, is present when we do conflict well. Isn't that amazing? Remember how we talked about when we dig deeper into those deeper emotional issues that are driving the event or the things that we argue and we fight about? When we get in touch with those deeper emotions here and with each other, then we see grace extended during conflict. We see it extended in friendship when we just accept the influence of others. We accept others and bring them in. And most of all, we see it as the lens through which God sees us. Therefore, because God sees us that way, remember where we had the list of those two, where how the servant views himself versus how God views him and her? It's because of the lens through which God sees us that we can be on the right side and be known, loved, valued, forgiven. And that is the basis that we have to have in place in order to be able to see other people that way. We'll never be able to view our spouse, our friends, our family, our children, our coworkers with that love and acceptance without having it first from God in place in our own hearts. So let's talk a little bit more about that. We want to show you a video, one of our favorite videos here, because what it is you guys, see the action of grace. You see grace in action in this video. So let's roll it.
And I know you guys get tired of me. It's little things.
Coach Peter Morales of the Coronado High School Thunderbirds in El Paso, Texas, makes no qualms about it. Okay. He has a favorite on this team.
Mitchell, I need you. I need you to help me out with my coaching tips, Mitchell.
Team manager Mitchell Marcus has a developmental disability.
1, 2, 3, bang!
But he far surpasses everyone here when it comes to love of the game.
He's this amazing person that our basketball team loves being around.
Yay!
Mitchell's mom, Amy, says he's always been that way.
Mitchell always had a basketball. That was always what he wanted for his birthday.
And because basketball is that important to him, on the last game of the regular season, the coach told Mitchell to suit up.
What was it like to put on the uniform?
I was very happy.
I imagine you were.
Just wearing a jersey was enough for Mitchell. But what he didn't know, what no one knew at the time, was that the coach planned to play him at the end, no matter what the score.
You were prepared to lose that game?
For his moment, yes. For his moment in time, yes.
And so, with a minute and a half left, Coronado leading, but only by 10, Coach Morales put in his manager.
And just started hearing Mitchell, Mitchell.
But here's where the fairy tale fell apart. Although his teammates did everything they could to get Mitchell a basket, each time they passed him the ball, he either missed the shot or, like on their last possession, booted it out of bounds, turning the ball over to the other team with just seconds left.
He wasn't going to be able to score. But I was hoping that he was happy that he was just put in the game.
Could you have ever imagined what happened next?
No, I didn't. I could not. Not at all.
What happened next happened on the inbound. The guy with the ball there is a senior at Franklin High School. Number 22, Jonathan Montañez.
I was raised to treat others how you want to be treated. Just thought Mitchell deserved his chance, deserved his opportunity.
I think I'll cry about it for the rest of my life.
What Jonathan did was yell out Mitchell's name, then threw the ball right to him, right there. One of the most memorable turnovers of all time. It wasn't the game-winning shot. When the buzzer sounded, Coronado had 15 more points than Franklin. But Jonathan's assist and Mitchell's basket did change the outcome decidedly. Play any game with this much sportsmanship. Both teams win. Steve Hartman, On the Road.
Oh, man, that's awesome, isn't it? Yeah.
I
just think there's a kid who said, I was raised to do unto others. Where did he get that from? That wasn't just from a philosophy from the world. That's straight out of the Gospels, right? Do unto others. And it's just to me an amazing sight. And look at what the fans did. It, you sometimes it's like you feel the holy. Would that be right? you feel the holy. So in that case, what you end up doing is you sense in this room, even though people aren't necessarily believers there, we don't know, they're sensing something magical happened when God shows up. It's amazing. What a great kid. I saw this video and I went up to my kids and you go over there and you do that. Watch this video and go do that. And yeah, what's that? Or you'll get a whooping. Or you won't get a whooping. Yeah. See, it's all messed up. I don't even know how to talk about that anymore. I do now talk about what Jesus said. This is my commandment, that you love one another just like I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down. And you know what that word lay down means? It means give. Give. One of the greatest words, man. Take it to heaven with us. Lay down, give his life for his friends, for no longer do I call you servants. This is what Elisa was saying. For that servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. You see, it goes like this. What's religion? Religion is your attempt to get to God. That's religion. You do good. You watch people. You pray. Or maybe you just kind of think good thoughts. Or maybe you don't cut somebody off. This is religion. It's your way to get to God. And God says, the free gift, what I have, what grace is God's way of coming to you. It's God's way of coming to us. You see, you ain't going to ever make it. I'm telling you, that chasm is too big. This is religion. I will do good. Maybe I won't cut people off. Maybe I'll be nice. Maybe I'll give something. Maybe I'll go feed the homeless. I'll do something. And this is what we try to do to get to God. And so what happens is this. This is, Lisa, the list that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Right?
The servants on the left versus the friends on the right.
Yeah. And one of your favorite quotes, I think, is...
I love this because it makes it, the very first one on that list under the friends with God is being known. Being known. And another word on that list, if you remember, is beloved. You're loved. Yeah. And look at this quote from Tim Keller. It says, to be loved but not known, well, it's comforting, but it's superficial. To be known but not loved, well, that's our greatest fear. But to be fully known and truly loved is, well, it's a lot like being loved by God.
I think, Lisa, as you talked about that, it's just this powerful visual. I think that greatest fear is what's so scary, right? I'm known, but because I know you, I don't love you. How many of y'all feel that way? If someone really, truly knew who I was, there'd be no way they're going to love me. I know some of you are sitting out there going, if God only knew what I have done and what I do, ain't no way he's going to come with me. There's no way. But I'm going to tell you something. You know what his nickname is? God's nickname is called the Great Hound of Heaven. Do you know what a great hound does? You know what they're trained to do? To pursue you. The great hound of heaven pursues you. You know what so many people think religion is? It's you pursue God and you get to him this way. And he says, I'm the great hound of heaven. I'm coming after you. He's the great pursuer, man. I don't care what you have done. I don't care what you've done in your life yesterday. I didn't know any of this, man. I was going to tell you something. This is my very first bumper sticker. I'm at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Now I don't know a thing. I've never read the Bible. I don't know anybody that's ever read the Bible. And I bought that. I bought it. And I put it on my car because my last name is Grace. And I didn't know what those little words down there said. How sweet the sound. I'm thinking, what is it, a band? And then F, what's F? E-F, E-F-F.
F.
Tweff-F, F.
F. Tweety. Two.
I don't know, what is that? So you know what I did? I cut it off with scissors. I cut it off because I didn't know what it meant. I drove around all of Las Vegas at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, with that sign, Amazing Grace. I'm sure Christians waved at me and honked. I'm like, oh, people are so nice here. Praise God. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I don't know what you're saying just now to me. I don't know a thing, people. And he's the great pursuer, the great hound of heaven. And this, Lisa, is the verse, man, that's pretty powerful.
Colossians 1, 13 through 14. Let's listen to this. He rescued us from the domain of darkness, and he transferred us, picked us up and transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved Son, Jesus, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins.
So, Lisa, did God rescue you? Listen, you guys don't know who I married, man. I gotta tell you something about her. Southern Baptist, from Texas. She actually, her mom gave birth in the Southern Baptist Church. Well, maybe, but close.
Close.
And she was raised from day one in that church.
Yeah.
And never left that church. Does she need Jesus? How many of y'all were raised in the church? Let me see your hands. All the day. Some of you need Jesus. I know what you're like.
Yeah.
I don't care if you've been raised in the church, man. Did you need Jesus and did you have to accept him and did he have to transfer you from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light?
Absolutely.
She was such a good kid. Like to see me with her? Oh my gosh. She says to me, Chris, I would have never dated you in high school. I said, I probably never would have asked you. Go ahead. Sorry.
True. No, that's absolutely true. I always say if I was going to give like a title to my testimony, it would be Even Good Girls Need Jesus. Because that was my story, born and raised in the church. As long as I've lived, I've always loved God. There's never been a time where I didn't love him. But what's interesting is in my journey as a believer, there have been times that what started by the work of the Holy Spirit, by bringing me and pursuing me and him doing that work, there's been a time that I've subtly shifted over trying to go back to the old way of earning my way back to God, trying to live my Christian life by my own effort and my own power, by my own sheer willpower. And then I wonder why it's not working. I'm wondering, why am I being so impatient? Why was I so snappy today? What he said, it was such a small little thing. Why did that bug me at work today? Why did I respond so quickly? Why do I get so down on myself when I compare myself with other people? When I'm looking at Facebook and social media, and I'm thinking, wow, my vacation doesn't quite look like that. Geez, I wish that would be better. Why can't we do that? But what started, it's actually a verse in Galatians that says, what was started by the Spirit, you're now trying to do again in the flesh. Why are you doing that? So we come into the kingdom of God by the power of his Holy Spirit, by a gift that he gives to us and we receive and take it in. But then is we fall into the danger of then trying to live that life out, the Christian life out, in our own power, in our own decisions, forgetting to invite him in and receive his influence as our friend. Yeah. And that's when the wheels start to come off the bus. So if you're living your Christian life and you're thinking, wow, why doesn't mine all add up? Why is this just not quite what I thought it was supposed to be? Looks like it is for other people, but it's not for me. It's because you're trying to do it in your own power.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's another story. So we're pregnant, and she's pregnant. And she is sitting there, and she says to me, it's our second pregnancy. She has really messed up pregnancies, you know. And she's sitting there, and this isn't really funny, but she comes to me at like about midnight. She says, she wakes me up. She says, Chris, my side hurts really bad. And I go, is it the baby? Because we were like 5 months along.
Yeah,
Is it the baby? She goes, I don't think so, man. I don't think so. I go, what are you doing? She goes, I don't know. I think I'll just walk around. I go, what should I do? She goes, should I call the doctor? What do I do? She goes, no, just stay here. So she walked around and I went back to sleep. And about like 15 minutes later, I hear this. Chris, it's my side hurts really bad. And I go like, well, what should I call the doctor? She goes, no, what'd you do? I tried to walk around. What are you going to do now? She goes, I think I'll get something to eat, like maybe a piece of toast or something. I go, okay. So she goes in there and I went back to sleep. And I'm lying there and she comes back in and I'm still asleep. And I heard one word. One word. I have never heard this woman utter any type of curse word in my whole life. I'm about to say it right now. Could you hit pause on the video? I'm lying there, and this woman, I hear this word, damn. And I go, I'm calling the doctor, man. I'm calling. I have never heard. What is that? I'm calling like 911, and y'all are on the other line going, what's up? I said, my wife just is cussing like a sailor over here. They go, what's wrong? She's pregnant. She's cussing. And they're like, well, bring her in, man. So we brought her in. By the way, it was so messed up, it was a kidney stone. And she only used that word one time. I just heard the diagnosis, and I'm cussing. All right, listen. These are no more stories. My rescue began on a baseball field. Okay, I'm in high school. It's a game, and I'm up there to bat. It's the ninth inning. There's two outs. There's a guy on. And it's my turn to bat, and I'm facing a guy that's going to make it into the minor leagues. He's that pitcher. And I go, oh, blast it. And I get up there, and I'm standing up there, and I'm getting ready to bat, and I go, oh my goodness, I don't know Jesus. I don't know anybody that knows Jesus. I don't know anybody that prayed to Jesus except my dad. He used that word all the time. And so I get up there and I hear six words. Six words changed everything, and it confronts you. You've had to answer these six words just like I did. So I stood up there, and when I got up there, it was my first experience. Anyone guess what those six words were? Right before I got up to bat, right? I get up to bat and I hear somebody talking to me. And they say these words, do you believe that I am? Do you believe that I am? Now, I can't tell you if it was like, I wasn't on the outside and I go like this, do you believe that I am? And I go like this, what is that? Who is that? And I get up to bat, and you know what I said? I am not answering that question right now. And that boy gets up there, and he throws me a curveball and lands in the dirt, and I swing. And he's like, oh, this is going to be fun. And I step back out, and it says, do you believe that I am? And I said, I am not answering that question right now. And the third base coach is like, what are you doing? And I'm like, do you hear that voice? And he's like, no, hit the ball. And I go, good Lord. And I'm standing up there. I'm not answering this. I'm not answering it. I don't know. I knew I had to make a decision. I'm telling you, I had to. And I get up there and the guy throws me what? Another curveball. And I go like that. I look like oh, he's just sitting there thinking, this is awesome. And I step back out, and he says it again, and I know it's, I have to answer it. Do you believe that I am? This is, and I, you know what I did? I literally looked over, and I'm looking at the catcher and the umpire, and he's like, step up. And I'm like, do you hear anything? And he's like, just bat. And I just said like this, ready? Yeah, I do. I think there is a God. I think a God exists. It changed everything. And it absolutely changed nothing. You see, I got up there and I went like this. I said, God, why are you intruding on me in the unexpected? Why are you here? I didn't ask for you. I didn't want you here. Why in this game right now? And there's three things that happened. You want to know? You want to know the outcome? Oh, he threw me a curveball. I guarantee, and I knew it was coming. And I went, boy, just make it a little bit higher. Don't bounce it like you've been bouncing it. Just throw it. I said, I do believe. It changed the course of my life, number one. By saying yes, the course of my life was changed right there. My hit, by the way, I won the game. That curve, let's hear it. No, and he threw it and I just went whack like that. It just went woo, it was like a bloop. Like, it didn't go like vroom. It went like bounce, 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 bounce right over the shortstop. And they mugged me at first base. And now we made it to the playoffs. Everybody's all happy. I'm all fine. And that field was transformed that morning into a place where God met me, and nothing changed in my life. And you know why? There was a problem. The problem was this. I didn't know God was there. I didn't know anything. Nothing changed. So you know what I did? I went to school, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and they have the best team in baseball, and I thought, oh, here we go, man. I was absolutely out of my league, never even went out for the team, and alcohol had been a part of my life since I was 14 years old. 5 nights of the week, I was going to tell you in high school, I was probably wasted. 5 nights. By the time I was a senior, it got to be where you knew every single bar that would serve you. Marijuana was rampant, cocaine was rampant, and I was just a non-believer. Man, I just messed up. And I still don't know what happened in that baseball game. I never told anybody. I didn't tell her until right after we were probably engaged or married.
Probably married a year or two.
It was so powerful and so deep. I knew nothing about it. So here I am. I know nothing about it. And now I'm in Vegas, in the pit of Vegas. And there ain't nothing good that happens in Vegas, man. And that's my life. Drugs, alcohol, and not knowing a single thing about Jesus. Nothing. I said to my dad one day, I said, Dad, because I was thinking about this baseball game. I was very lonely, and I wasn't playing baseball. I wasn't doing anything, just school. I said, Dad, do we have a Bible? And he looked at me like, what? I go, you know, a Bible. Do we have one? He's like, no. Dad, why would you get one of them Bibles? He goes, I don't know, son. I said, do you think you have to go to a motel and steal one? And he goes, that's the only place I've ever seen one. I'm thinking, how do I check into a motel and steal a Bible? And I never did, but I thought about it. Isn't that weird? And no one came up and talked to me about any of this. And so you know what happened? 2 years later, I'm at Las Vegas, and I am a lost soul. I'm a lost soul. Oh, I messed it up. I did. I messed it up real bad. What do I do? Is he going to turn it off?
Yeah.
He'll turn it off. And I was lost, man. And so, just simply this idea, I didn't know a Christian. Everything I knew about it was anybody who was drunk or cussing is the only time they used that word, Jesus. I had no understanding of the connection between God and that poor man who hung on the cross. You see, I went to Catholic church 3 times in my whole life. Never went, I don't think, after the first grade. But I saw a cross, and I saw Jesus hanging on that cross. Yeah, how many of y'all Catholic? Used to be. Grew up. Whatever. I grew up Catholic, man, and you know what we do? That Jesus is on the cross, isn't it? Go back to a Catholic church, he's hanging there. And I used to think, man, how long has he been on that cross? You know Pirates of the Caribbean, when they hang them pirates and they just sit there swinging? I thought, is he still on there? I didn't know it. I was just a kid thinking, wow. So 2 years later, man, I'm this same lost soul. I'm at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I didn't know a single word. I didn't know anything. My life looked exactly the same. Transferred, finally went over to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And when I transferred there, somebody finally, I'm standing in the registration line, and this guy goes like this. He goes, hey, buddy, you want to answer a couple questions? I go, sure. And he goes, uh-huh, let's start with this. Do you know who God is? I'm like, And you know, I'm thinking to myself, I talked to him one time. And he goes, uh-huh, do you know who Jesus was? And I went, yep, he's this guy. You know when you do that? And I go, yeah, he's this guy right here. And he goes, okay, do you ever read the Bible? And I go, no, do you have a Bible? Like, where do you get one of those things? Do you have to go to motels and get them? And he's like, no, I'll come by your room and give you one. I go, do you know who Jesus is? I go, well, he was the son, I think, and all of that. He came up to my room, man. He shared the gospel with me and told me who Jesus was. And he said Jesus got down off of that cross. And I go, there's no way this guy can accept me. You know what I do and I've done? These guys on this floor, it's bad, it's messed up. And he said, he came, not this way, but he came down to meet you. And I remember thinking, that's the most amazing thing I ever heard. And says, Chris, you know what you have to do to accept Jesus, to have your life changed, to become a beloved one, to leave from the side of servant
who is judged and doesn't know, and go from the other side from coming down. It's a gift, and all he does is say, here's the gift. Chris, what do you have to, he had a pen in his hand. And he had written this little thing. You guys, it was so amazing. He wrote this little thing on a napkin. This isn't the actual napkin. This is what he actually wrote on the napkin. And what this actually writes on the napkin, what it says is, for the wages of sin is death. And he said, Chris, that's the wages, man. Everybody, every human has a wage, and this is it. And it's wages of sin. And you're over here trying to get to God. Look at that chasm. You try and get to God. He goes, do you do that? I go, yeah, man, I'm trying to do all kinds of good things. Like, I think good thoughts about people. I didn't get drunk last week at all. And all these interesting things I tried to do, and like, yeah, it's been nice. And he says, it'll never work. And he said, this is what you have to do. There's a gift. You accept that gift. How do you do it? I said, you just take it. He goes, that's how you do it. You just take it. It's the most amazing thing, y'all. Some things for me, all of a sudden now, he said, this is what bridges the gap. You see that gap right there? It's bridged by Jesus. Because he comes this way. And does this make sense to you? I said, yes, it does. I want that. And guess what? I invited all these guys, like on the baseball team, all these drunk guys. Six of us were in the room. Three of us accepted Jesus. And six of us never, the other three of the six never did. And man, I am telling you, my life went like this. If she would have seen me, she would have asked me out. Maybe. Here's the amazing thing and news about God. He so loved us that he sent his son who died. He died on that cross. And he died for our sins. Then he rose from the grave, and now he rescues and forgives those who believe and who accept his gift of life eternal, who ask him to be Lord. Yeah, he's making himself known everywhere. He's making himself known on baseball fields and in Las Vegas, in drug houses, in the mansions of Orange County, and in firehouses everywhere. In firehouses everywhere, man, God is there because he's the great pursuer. He ain't didn't give up. He's the great hound of heaven. I don't care what you've done. He's coming after you. And it's so simple because he loves you and says, I want you to be my loved. Y'all, thank you for allowing us the gift of acceptance and the grace you've extended to us to speak to you. It's been such a joy and a blessing to be with you. Lise?
Thank you. Yeah. Just a final word. There's Corrie Ten Boom. She and her sister and her father hid Jews during World War II in Amsterdam. And they were discovered. Somebody had reported them to the police, to the Gestapo. They were arrested and they were sent to a concentration camp. They were avid believers, committed believers. And Corrie and her sister Betsy were in the concentration camp. And the woman that had crippled fingers, she had been a concert violinist. And she came to Corrie. Because then Corrie and Betsy would lead Bible studies in their barracks there at the concentration camp. The Nazi guards would never come in because it was full of fleas and lice. And so they never came in, which gave them the freedom to share Christ with all of these women that were suffering with them. And this woman who had been a concert violinist, her fingers were gnarled like this. And she said, this is what I have. What do I do with this now? And Corrie said to her the exact same thing that the guy who shared Christ with Chris said, that there is no pit so deep, no hurt so deep, no sin so great, that God's love is not greater still. So Cheyenne wants to come up and share a couple of words with you as we leave. We've loved you. Thank you so much.